evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. At this time, to begin the tech net, as we do most Sunday evenings, starting at 8 o'clock. The main purpose of the tech net is education. Curious radio amateurs gather and share information about what they've learned about their usual favorite hobby of ham radio. And we discuss how transmitters and receivers and transmission lines and antennas work, and propagation, and there's 26 or 27 different kinds of ham radio. We discuss all of those. A couple of significant things happened this week. There was a meeting of landmark people, meaning Rich, K2KNB, Jerry, WB2ZEX, and myself, over at the QTH of KC2WGB, a recent silent key. And we met his daughter, Donna. Also, there was another significant event that happened on Friday night when we held what Roy calls an Irish wake. Roy, AC2GS, gathered 25 different sign-ins starting at 9 o'clock at night on Friday. And for the next 8 hours, we discussed our memories of John, KC2WGB, the recent silent key. And so later on I'll be listing those people who signed in, and also quite possibly Roy, AC2GS, will give us his impression as to how that worked. From my point of view, it was very successful. Let me drop. And the reason for that unusual event, the Irish wake, as we call it, the John Beck Memorial, 8-hour get-together, is because John was such an unusual person, and you'll be hearing more details about that. In the case of the TechNet that you're listening tonight, it began in September 1982, 35-plus years ago, going on 36 years. Let me think about that. No, 34 years, going on 35, if I got the math right, 1982, 2017. A person signs in because they do have a question or a comment by giving us your call letters, your name, because I'm so darn forgetful, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. If you're just listening, you need not sign in just because you're listening. After 34 plus years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proved to us anymore. Let me drop. And when we do turn it over to you, try to remember to not key the mic immediately. Wait a few seconds until you hear the four beeps so that we don't time out the machine, particularly because we have people who sign in from far away places from time to time, by way of Echolink, IRLP, and that portion of the network needs more time to reset so that they don't get locked out. Okay, this time we're going to take check-ins for people who do have a question or comment. Just give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening.
November 2, Hotel, United Hotel.
And that was Andy, into HUH, one of the guys who was part of the Irish wake on Friday night. The next person to chime in, sign in, who does have a call letters, I mean, give me your call letters and name right now, K2RIW. One more call. Anyone else to sign in? Because you do have a question or a comment. Please give me your call letters and name right now.
WS Glenn Paul with the Space Report. Good evening, Dick.
Good evening, Paul. Paul most likely will be giving us Space Report number 264. And there was some significant launches of space hardware that took place this week. One last call. Anyone else who sign in because you do have a question or a comment for the TechNet? Please give me the call letters right now. K2 Romeo India Whiskey. We're listening. Andy, it looks like it's just you and me tonight. Maybe we're going to have a light night tonight. So what's new in your neighborhood, Andy? N2 Hotel, Uniform Hotel. Who's got a real Richie set of phonetics for school letters. K2IW. Go ahead, Andy.
Yes, Dick, you and me just cannot fail if we never stop. But anyway, good evening to you and Annette. This is Handy Andy, N2HUH. Nice to have useful hands. And the first, I might have a dozen electronic questions or antenna questions, but what I was going to ask you specifically was, I never heard your point of view on whether it's an HF rig that costs $10,000 or an SDR unit that costs $6,000 or $7,000. What exactly is that radio doing for me to be able to just to talk to someone, hear somebody and talk to them that a $200 HF rig wouldn't do, that you can buy? I mean, there's reputable hams. You can still buy a used HF rig for $200 or $300, maybe even $1,000, okay, so $1,500. So brand new Rycom costs $7,300 cost $1,300. Not to confuse things, but what am I getting from that rig? I just don't know, and I'd like to hear your opinion on that. N2HUH.
I'm pretty sure, Andy, I'm not the expert on this one. I'm going to give you a few of my impressions, but then I'm going to turn it over to the net for people who have used some of the modern whiz-bang rigs that have got all kinds of fancy details and a slightly higher price. But a software-defined radio is very easy and usually very easy to computer control, and you can, by way of the computer control, define frequency, mode, bandwidth, IF offset. Many of them have direct frequency synthesis, extremely high frequency stability. Some of them have digital signal processing, so that in the receive mode, when it comes to certain kinds of repetitive interference, they can get rid of the repetitive interference. They have tunable notches and tunable peaks and all kinds of fancy mechanisms for adjusting the resolution bandwidth for the signal that you're listening to. And whether you're listening to a CW signal, let me drop this. Listening to a CW signal, and maybe your favorite way of listening to a CW signal is with a 500 hertz filter. With a single sideband signal, maybe your favorite way of listening is with a 2.4 kc bandwidth filter, with certain shape and certain ringing factors to that filter. So lots of memories, built-in antenna tuner, automatically tuned antenna tuner. So these are some of the features. Are you really getting your money's worth if you're a person who wants to save as much money as possible compared to the older pieces of equipment? There's no easy answer to that one. Some of them have got some very fancy displays, which you can be using a Spectran-like display. In other words, you can have the equivalent of a spectrum analyzer, or a service monitor, so to speak, a picture on the screen, which shows you where the activity is in the band that you're operating on, so you can choose a good frequency to call CQ on. So these are some of the features that I've heard about and seen on some of the more modern, expensive rigs. But for you guys out there that are really using these pieces of equipment, please sign in right now and tell us what you're getting for that extra money and those extra performance details. K2IW listening.
A clarification, Dick, before...
Go ahead, Andy.
I don't mind listening all night. I don't mind. I mean, I'm sure maybe a lot of other people would mind listening also to, like, all the whiz-bang features of these units. But basically my question is, how does any of this, whether it's a $10,000 HF transceiver or a $7,000 SDR radio, how does that help me speak to a station better?
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
GXM, with a comment?
GXM will pick up with you in a minute. Andy, you picked up before waiting for the four beeps. You timed out for the last 60 seconds. So After I pick up the GXM, I'm going to ask you to repeat your question because most of it we didn't hear. Mr. GXM, K2LAW, go ahead.
Thank you, Dick, and the TechNet K2RW, WB2GXM, Rich. Andy, I myself like older radios. I like the 80s vintage-style radios. I like a piece of electromechanical sculpture, if you will, that I can use to communicate with other people, and I have paid less money for them, too. But at the risk of stating the obvious, an SDR-based radio will never become obsolete. If the government, in its infinite wisdom, chooses to change all our frequencies, an SDR radio I buy will still be relevant and will still work. All my old radios may become junk. WB2GXM.
Hey, thank you for that, Rich. Andy, you probably want to add something to your original question. As I said, the last almost 60 seconds we missed because of the timeout. N2HUH, who's going to wait for the beeps this time? K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Richard. Well, maybe if I was 20, 30 years old or starting out, I would buy an SDR today, but good point. I like that point, actually. I didn't think of it. I really didn't give it much thought, in all honesty, because I'm not interested yet, really. But I want to know how the radio, the $10,000 regular HF radio or a $7,000 SDR radio will help me talk to somebody in Kentucky or in New York that I can't hear on any radio, or the person in Kentucky, like if I can hear him on one of my radios, or if I can hear him on all six of my radios, what is the SDR doing? And if I can't hear him on my six radios here in the shack, how will the SDR allow me to hear that station that none of my other radios will allow me to hear? That's what I'm basically asking. And how will it help me to hear that station over these other mainframe radios that I have? That, I guess, is the basis of my question.
C2IS, comment.
AC2IS, recognized. Before I go over to you, Bill, I want to go back to Rich for a second. Andy's question is, if I'm not hearing that station that I want to talk to, that implies that the band's not open in that direction, the signal's below the noise. But when it comes to the weak signal JT, WSJT, digital modes, they can give you a signal that's 25 dB below the noise, and you can communicate with Morse code, and some of the modern WSJT techniques with their software will print the message across the screen. And I know that Andy is asking more about sideband, but when it comes to difficult conditions, WSJT is by far the technique I know of that will dig the deepest into the noise and give you communication when no other way is possible. So my question to you, Rich, since you seem to be more familiar with modern rigs, if I was setting up a WSJT mode of operation, would a software-defined radio and some of these modern, more expensive rigs help me do that? WB2GXM, K2RIW, you've got it, Rich.
B2RW, WB2GXM. Well, you know, Dick, I don't use Whisper, I don't use WJT, but I can tell you that a software-based radio is easily adaptable to anything you might want to use it for, including the fact that digital signal processing can achieve filters that are impossible to do mechanically or physically. They will give you brick wall filters that are impossible to do by building one alone. So that will help with conditions. It'll separate signals. The receiver can be easily updated for increased sensitivity. Let me drop. And any other improvements you can think of is at the immediate output of the computer programmer's typewriter. You don't have to build anything. That makes them very useful. If you need a rig that is just buy it and go, you get a software-defined radio, and you're good for anything you might need it for. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best thing for a home builder or a DIYer, but it's the state of the art in terms of you buy it, you use it, it'll work. WB2GXM.
I thank you for that information, Rich. Let's see what Bill's got to say about all this. AC2IS, one of these progressive guys who probably owns a software-defined radio and has used it, and is about to give us some clarification. You got it, Bill. AC2IS, wait for the beeps. K2IW.
Hey, Dick. Yeah, I guess technically speaking, I do own an SDR, I just wanted to point out what an SDR is and that it can span a sort of a wide range of things. So I have a little USB dongle that I can plug into my laptop, and it contains, originally designed as a TV tuner, but you can run software called SDR Shark, Sharp, rather, on your laptop and get it to do all kinds of things that it was not designed to do, including receive ham bands. So that particular device does not transmit on ham bands, but there are other more expensive SDR systems designed to work with computers that do. Let me drop for a second. I believe what you're talking about is something along the lines of a base station that was designed as an SDR, and I would guess that if you had an SDR, you know, base station tuned in to a particular frequency, and you had your other radio designed and built in whatever 1950, 1980, or you know, the early 2000s or something, you probably would not hear a lot of differences. But if you happen to have a spectrum analysis display on the front of your SDR, that's sort of a key feature, especially for contesting, where you can see in any station on the sort of the back half of your IF, you'll see a spectrogram, and if somebody else is talking on a frequency not exactly the one that you're listening on, you'll see a peak, and you'll know that there's somebody there that you could be listening to, or perhaps 3, 4, 5, 10 people within the range of your IF that you could be talking to, and that may help you a lot. Let me break and then follow up with one other thing. So that other thing is that software-defined radios, the software part is all sort of beyond the IF. You've got two stages in your radio. The first brings it down to an intermediate frequency, and in non-SDR radios, then there's another stage that just sort of tunes within a swath of bandwidth that first stage has downshifted for you. Some radios, my understanding is, give you access to that intermediate frequency, and that you can pipe that out from, very possibly, from one of your existing radios into another device and do some interesting SDR things without buying another full-blown radio. And I think that there's something maybe called SDR Droid. Somebody demonstrated for something for me that I thought was sort of a hoax, and maybe it was, but basically he took a speaker, he plugged it into the IF output of his base station, and then he used his cell phone, the speaker on it, or rather the microphone, could hear supposedly the high-pitched IF tones coming out of the speaker that was plugged into his base station. And then from his cell phone, he got a spectrum analysis, and he was able to tune various stations within the range of that IF. that had been downshifted. AC2IS, and Dick, if you want to ask me questions about anything I've mentioned, please do. AC2IS.
N2EO, Dick, what a comment.
Okay, I heard N2EO, and who was the other person who just signed in?
2S, 2GS.
Okay, I'm only hearing the suffix GS, so it sounds like it's Roy, AC2GS. Okay, we're going to go to Rich first, N2EO. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick. It's funny you bring this subject up. I'm right now downloading the latest firmware for the Kenwood PS590SG. I have version 1, and they upgraded it to 1.04. And what it says on another file, I have to read it more, now through software, they're bringing out the first IF to a jack. I'm not exactly sure how they're doing it. I have to read it further. That will allow you to hook up a computer as a pen adapter. Back to net.
Yeah, very fine, Rich. We are waiting for you to unkey. Thank you for that information. And we're going to go also over to Roy, I think it is, AC2GS, with some further information on this. AC2GS, wait for the beeps. K2RIW, you got it, Roy.
This is AC2GS operating on a Flex 67 SDR right now. So I believe in software-defined radios. I think they're great things. They're not panaceas. They won't solve all your problems. They won't balance your checkbook. But they do a lot of things. And there's a great deal of confusion what a software-defined radio is and what it isn't. And there's a bunch of things that aren't necessarily a software-defined radio. If you output the IF into a display and get a pan adapter display, that's not necessarily a software-defined radio. If you have a USB connection and you do software-controlled radios, that's really not a software-defined radio. That's just software control. Analog radios can do that in the last 10, 15 years. And digital signal processing chips are all over the place in analog radios. So that isn't necessarily a software-defined radio either. Software-defined radios actually do filtering and demodulation and all operations that analog computers do with analog circuits and mechanical filters in the digital domain as a computer. It has algorithms for many of these things. And if the algorithm isn't as good as it could be, you can change it, whereas you can't change things unless you're willing to desolder and resolder and then figure out if they all work together. So it's a different thing entirely, and I tend to like the bleeding edge, so I love it. You know, I'm staring at the entire VHF spectrum along with 20 meters, 40 meters, and 10 meters, and I kind of like it.
I thank you, Roy. And Roy, let me ask you this question. A software-defined radio, if I understand correctly, is getting more and more digitized, is the best way I can put it. In other words, everything from the front end becomes digitized with modern-day integrated circuit chips, mimics, and whatever. I am going to guess, and you're going to correct me on this, that a modern-day software-defined radio is capable of being very small, very compact, very efficient. A K3, for instance, might be one here, I'm not sure. But I think one of the advantages you can get is an extremely portable, compact, efficient, reliable radio once you go over to software-defined and more digital as opposed to analog. I a bunch of guesses on my part. Please correct me, Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW in the TechNet.
To a degree, I would agree with that. You can theoretically build small analog radios if you really focus upon that aspect of the radio. Software-defined radios usually use a lot of silicon. They get warm. They don't get terribly hot, but they get warm, so they need ventilation. I think most of the space in my radio is taken up with the transmitter circuits as opposed to the receiver circuits. So, they're all very, very densely circuited, as most radios are these days. They all use surface mounts up the wazoo. And, I don't know if that's the primary benefit. As I said, you know, there is that thing that new firmware can basically turn your radio into a completely new radio, which is great. The downside is if the company goes out of business or if the open source people get tired of working on the open source, then you're kind of stuck with that last version of the software, and that's the last version of your radio. So, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Eric recognized, and I'm going to go back to Roy with one more quick question, and that is software-defined radio is a new concept a few years ago. Everything new is expensive at first. As it becomes accepted and has multiple brand names and multiple model numbers available, it starts getting cheaper. In your particular case, Roy, a guy who probably is good at choosing the right radio for you, what software-defined radio did you choose? Brand name, model number, and roughly how many dollars did it cost then, and how many dollars does it cost now? Because part of what Andy's original question was, he thinks that these modern rigs are going to be super expensive. Maybe not. AC2G.
Repeater, timeout.
Looks like I timed it. AC2GS, K2RIW. You got it, Roy. Wait for the beeps.
AC2GS. Okay. Before I frighten everyone by telling them what I have, ICOM recently came out with the IC7300. It's an introductory type of a software-defined radio. It has reasonably good specs, and it costs something like $1,200-$1,300. So you don't have to go crazy like I did. I wanted 8 simultaneous receiver capability. You know, I can theoretically record and or listen to 8 repeaters or 2 repeaters and 3 HF and 4 VHF and God knows whatever. So I bought the Flex Radio 6700 about 3 or 4 years ago. It did send me back $7,500, which I realize is a great deal of cash for many, many people. But I wanted that capability. And some people look at me and say, why do you need 8? And yet I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 radio slices open on my screen right now. So I like it. So I put my money on a Flex Radio 6700.
Good information. Thank you, Roy. Eric, K2EJ. How many software-defined radios have you come in contact with? How many have you bought? And have you found a way of not spending a boodle of money but getting all the performance you want? KE2EJ. K2RIW. You've got it, Eric.
K2RIW. K2J. In relation to Andy's question, the difference between, say, a $10,000 Yaesu or ICOM on a software-defined radio is that somewhat of a difference in terms of you're getting the best in terms of the analog world. That is in front end, mixer, IF. Actually, many of them have the 3 stages of IF. Filtering within the limits of what you can do analog. By you doing different kinds of algorithms, for example, in your radio, in a software-defined radio, you might be using a FIR filter or an IIR filter, an algorithm that will let you define a filter bandwidth that could be as wide as 10 hertz or 100 hertz or 1,000 hertz. The difference between the two is one of the things about a software-defined radio is it isn't a D to A connected to, an A to Z connected to your antenna. Let me let it drop. You still have a front end. You still have a mixer. You still have the issues of IP3. But there is some conversion to bring the, either the up convert and then down convert to a frequency that the A to D is capable of. And from there, in the old days, by the way, we used to use microprocessors for the IF, and once we've digitized it, we go into a microprocessor and have that do the algorithms. It's no longer the case because it's too slow. You're limited. Don't forget, a microprocessor does one thing at a time. Whereas today's radios are built around FPGAs. An FPGA could have, you could actually conform, you actually design the radio hardware-wise in software. So you could, in essence, have multiple front ends, multiple IF, multiple demodulators. So the limitation in the software-defined radio, really in terms of the hardware, of how they put the front end together. Because once you get into the software domain, there's amazing things that you can do. And I actually haven't bought any software-defined radios. I've built them and made them operate with open source and stuff that I've written. And it's incredible what you can do. You remember with me, I think it was 10 or 15 years ago, I was playing with some DSP stuff, which actually became my first software-defined radio. You can make software-defined receivers by going out and buying a $15 or $20 dongle and some software that was written by a bunch of people, and you've got yourself a really nice receiver. I'm going to let it drop again. The other big difference between the $10,000 radio and the software-defined radio is some software-defined radios of today actually have a front panel with a knob that you can do your tuning with and things like that. But as a general rule, when you start with SDR-type radios, you're really working off a computer, and you've got the issues of your computer making noise and stuff like that, getting back into your antenna system, not necessarily into the radio. Like the Flex is a fabulous radio. It is, you put a terminator on the end of it, you can put a transmitter right next to it, and not hear a thing. That aspect of it is very well designed. But the $10,000 radio will give you, you know, two receiver knobs, two tuning knobs, a transmitter knob, your filter control knobs. You know, it's loaded with knobs. So if you're a guy that likes to twist and turn things rather than click buttons on your computer screen, that might be the answer for you. It depends upon where you're operating, what you want to do, how you want to operate. So the $10,000 analog radio, really, the whole back end of the $10,000 analog radio is really a software-defined radio, because once they go IF, they go A to D, the modulation is done totally in the digital domain. So there's lots of reasons to choose one over the other, but again, it depends upon you as an operator and what you're interested in. K2RIW, K2J.
Comment?
Hi, thank you, Eric. And in a minute, I'm going to go back to Andy for him to ask for any fills on what he's heard so far. The person who said comment, please wait for the beeps, give us your call letters and your full name, and go right ahead with your information. K2RIW listening.
Sorry, Dick. It's Alpha Charlie 2 Gulf Sierra again. I just wanted to point out that my Flex is a direct digital sampling radio. It doesn't have an IF. It doesn't have a mixer. The newer ones don't need it. And the newest Flexes that were announced recently, the 6400M and the 6600M, have an actual front panel with displays and knobs and dials and all manner of things.
Thank you, Roy. So, Andy, hopefully this helps a little bit, and you're going to probably ask for some fills on some of the information you just heard. N2HUH, K2RIW. Go right ahead, Andy. He's the guy who asked the original question.
Oh,
All righty, all very good, Dick. And thank you, Eric. Thank you, Roy. I like when the so-called, I'll call them the heavyweights, like to answer the questions here, get it from the guys that I know and respect, as opposed to maybe people in the, somebody in the middle of Texas, and they don't have noise interference and all kinds of neighbors nearby and trees and houses and structures in a way, so when they brag about a piece of equipment, that's not necessarily my situation. So right now I'm doing a repair on a 1970s HF rig, and I'm wondering if I'll be able to do that with the software-defined radio when it's not under warranty, but I guess that'll wait to be seen. I do work on service mount components. Matter of fact, I just spilled a few on a rug, and I have to pick those up. But it's short. Let me let it drop, and I'll clarify my question. We'll get a fill. It's actually the second time today I dropped the surface mount component, and I have to spend a half an hour looking for it. That's not a lot of fun either. Anyway, maybe I have to carry one of my lightweight mobile type HF rigs and then I'd have to go to a store that has SDR or somebody that has one and say, okay, here's my FT-100, for instance, and which I had to repair recently. I actually took that to South America with me. Worked great. I can't hear this station. You can hear the station on your SDR, but I can't hear it on my FT-100, so that would convince me that I want an SDR radio. Or I can hear it, but I can't hear what he's saying because of all the noise that we're getting, but your SDR radio is able to filter out the noise. If I hear that for myself, I will then want to buy an SDR. Let me let it drop one more time. Right now, I'm not crazy about looking at screens. When I'm doing a repair on any electronic equipment or anything, even my car, let's say, and my eyes are tired, they're itchy, they're burning, or I'm just tired, but I want to have a conversation with somebody. And that's all. I don't want to look at screens. And they could be talking about a subject that I have absolutely no interest in listening about or something along those lines. So I just never found a radio with a display screen usable at all. I'd rather get somebody and talk to them for half an hour, like I do here. Although, thank God, I'm not talking for half an hour. But you get the idea. Just have a QSO for half an hour or so, even longer if better. So basically, I'm waiting for somebody to tell me, well, this SDR radio can actually hear, you can actually hear a station that you can't hear on your FT-100. You get the idea. N2HUH.
Here you go, Jay. You've got it, Eric. Wait for the beeps. Just a comment on Roy's comment. I just looked up the text on the radio. It has a front end. It also has pretty selectors, but the clock runs at 983 megahertz, so obviously the A to D is capable of covering the HF band. And I see that they actually have transmitters for anything above, let's see, 75 megahertz. So that goes beyond, if you look at where Nyquist is to that, and don't forget, that's a clock frequency that's 984. So it's going to take, assuming that they made the FPGAs that they're using do essentially a DSP that's either 24 or 36 bits wide if it's an analog device, or even a Freescale, which would be 56 bits wide. There's a certain amount of pre-selectedness going on, so that way you don't swamp the whole ADD all at once. But it's got extremely wide bandwidth. The actual ADD resolution of the 6700 is 245 megasamples per second, so that's really great for HF. You can't beat that. But
is going to be looking at the specs and what one of the test laboratories shows. There is a little bit of stuff happening in terms of the front end. So, you know, you got to do that. Otherwise, you're going to be swamping the whole thing out. So, K2RIW, K2 again.
AC2GS?
Go right ahead, Roy. Wait for the beeps.
No, I totally agree with Eric. There is pre-amplification. There's a little filtering around the broadcast FM band, and actually it's able to finagle something by anti-aliasing to the second-order frequency, and I don't use a transferter to speak here on VHF. I do need a transferter to speak on UHF, but I get a 100 milliamp output from the radio. All I need is a amplifier for it. So they did a little magic as far as that's concerned, and you can do VHF on the 6700. Can't do it on the lesser models.
One of the things that GXM mentioned earlier is that the modern-day radios with DSP can give you a brick wall filter, and in some cases that's good. How clean the single sideband sounds is heavily dependent on the characteristics of that IF filter that's filtering out the single sideband from all the noise. In the past, people used to think that the state-of-the-art in IF filters was the Collins crystal filter and some of their better radios. I'm guessing you guys are going to tell us that the modern-day digital signal processing can go way beyond the performance of that Collins filter. No ringing action, no tubby sounds to it, good fidelity, tremendous rejection in the skirts of signals that are on adjacent frequencies and so on. Is that roughly true? And anyone want to add any comments to that? Give me a call that is right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
2GS.
K2GS. Yeah, each time you come back to us, Roy, we only hear the GS. The beginning, it doesn't get in there. So, Roy and then Eric in that order. Go ahead, Roy.
Well, yeah, it depends upon what kind of digital filter that you use. There's two basic protocols, algorithms that are used, FIR, IIR, and I won't go into any details because it'll just give a bunch of people a bunch of headaches. One of them is a little bit more sophisticated, requires more computer resources, and has negligible ringing. The other one is cheap, easy, and dirty, and has a little bit of ringing. But if you design it well, it should be as good as the best mechanical. I'm sure Eric has exact details about that and maybe a differing opinion because I haven't specced all these things, but I love the fact that I can choose what kind of filter I want on the fly. If it's a little bit too wide, I can narrow it and vice versa. So I'm a big fan of digital filtering.
Thank you, Roy. Eric? What's the state-of-the-art of DSP filtering, KE2EJ, if that's what you're going to tell us, K2RIW, you got it, Eric.
K2RIW, K2EJ, an IIR filter is an infinite impulse response filter, and an FIR filter is a finite impulse response filter. One is actually, FIR filters are really used for servo loops and things of that nature. The FIR filter is closer to your traditional, you know, Chebyshev, that type of analog filtering. But the other thing with DSP is that there's about six or seven different ways that you can take single sideband and make output. So, really, do have a greater sampling, a higher sampling rate, which the Flex does, it's going to get you more true to what the analog origination of the audio is going to sound like. Slower sample rates, you get more artifacts. And that's a magic word in terms of when you do anything digital, artifacts. Like, you don't realize that when you're watching television and you're looking at your high-definition picture, the bit rate that's actually coming out of the camera is 1.16 gigabits per second. But in order to get it to your house, we've got to slow it down to 19 megabits per second. So to do that, we do some fancy, actually more than some fancy algorithms to break it down In the process of that, there are certain kinds of artifacts which your eyeball could see. Although, as the newer method of TV transmission comes around, the artifacts will be different and you'll notice them less. But anything in the digital world, because everything is sampled, the faster you sample, the more true you get. Same thing with audio. And it actually, when you go to a recording studio these days, you used to record at 44 or 48 kilohertz. Now we're doing 96 and 128 kilohertz worth of sampling, which gets you closer to the analog original. And you, each time you double the Nyquist frequency, you also increase the bandwidth capability.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
You only timed out the last 8 seconds or so, Eric.
Very good.
So, I think digital circuits with our ham radio is going to catch on. Both by way of weak signal JT, digging into the noise for Morse code-like signals, very fancy filtering for a single sideband, very fancy frequency conversion, listening to multiple frequencies simultaneously. I think the digital stuff's going to catch on. Let's see if Andy, who asked the original questions, got some further fills or questions on what he's heard so far. N2NQH, you've opened up a pretty vast area here, Andy, and you may not get the whole answer tonight, and you're allowed to come back next week and ask additional questions along these lines. N2NQH, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Alrighty, I'm glad I can ask a decent question every now and then. Remember, there was a time that I was working every Sunday that I couldn't participate in the TechNet at all. In my radio dead environment at the salt mine. So, thank you for entertaining my questions and continue to do so while I'm still able to ask them. And, all right, I think I'm satisfied on the subject for now. I did stop working so I can hear all the good answers to the question, pretty much. And although I am still going to wait for the day that if I don't buy one, that I bring my old-fashioned radio over and say, okay, let me hear a station that yours can hear that mine can't. And when that day comes, then I'll probably buy one. Unless, of course, it's a good buy. very good, Richard. Very good. And back to you in the net. N2HUH, Handy Andy, nice to have useful hymns. Ciao for now.
Yeah, what you were hinting about there, Andy, is an extremely good test, side-by-side test. Take your radio that you think is good, bring it over to the QTH of a guy who's got something more modern that you're considering, and then go on the exact same band, and in some cases with a T-connector, the antenna coming into a T-connector, and you can pour it into both radios. Sometimes you can get away with that without the radios forming any form of incompatibility with each other, and therefore you can simultaneously listen to the exact same frequency at the exact same time, and compare the results. That can at times give you real world, what's the word for it now, in vivo information as to how it's going to perform and whether or not that's what you're looking for. The main subject that Andy was asking about tonight is software-defined radios and very modern radios versus the old-fashioned analog ones. Anybody have any further comments about what you're really getting for your money and why it's worth seeking, the modern-day radios. If you've got any further information on that, please give me a call letters right now. K2IW in the TechNet. Okay, maybe we've closed down that subject for tonight, but that's such a vast subject, which has got so many individual characteristics to it, that I guarantee we'll be discussing it more in the future. That unusual event that took place 9 o'clock Sunday night, the Irish wake for our recent silent key, John KC2WGB. That silent wake is primarily the genius of Roy, AC2GS, who was the net control for that. And the people who signed in, roughly 25 people, were N2XJN, Wes, Rich N2EO, Rich K2KNB, Andy N2HUH, N2HVR, Nick, Lou NY2H, WS2N, Paul, KE2QR, Fred, KD2FIU, George, AC2KY, Warren, K2RIW, Dick, KD2CBV, Todd, KD2MPW, Mike, KE2EJ, Eric, WA2CDL, Andy. I didn't get all the call letters, but the K7WJM, Bill, KG2RY, David, KD2NOU, Benjamin, WA2GXM, Rich, Bernie, K2YO, WA2VVH, Harold from the Massachusetts area, signing in an RF, he's almost in Vermont, Don, KD2DIG, and there's probably quite a few more, but these are the ones that I remember writing down. Maybe Roy is going to tell us a little bit more about how he got the idea. Was he pleased with the results? It started off at 9...
Repeater, timeout.
The Irish Wake started off at 9 o'clock at night and ended at 5 a.m., 8 hours later. And at least these 25 guys that I listed, and probably a few more, where I fell asleep in the middle of it. And so I guarantee I missed some of the guys who signed in. So give us some words on the Irish Wake, Roy. AC2GS, the Irish Wake Maven, K2RIW. You got it, Roy.
Yes, AC2GS here. I don't know if you mentioned Lou, NY2H, and Warren, AC2KY, was also there, and there's probably some other people, but I had to look for the piece of paper. I was talking to HUH, and in the back of my head, I kind of pined for an opportunity for us all to kind of get together and have some kind of closure, because unfortunately, you know, we all knew John wasn't doing well, but we didn't know any of the details, and he was off the air for a while, and then we heard the bad news. So when HUH mentioned that, you know, some guys should get together and kind of talk about him, I just kind of got this idea about the Irish Wake, and I thought it was a very good idea, especially for John, although he's not Irish, because he used to spend his evenings on the air almost every other night, keeping people awake all through the night. And I figured that that would be the greatest type of memorial you could give some guy like John, although he would have hated it because he was a humble guy, and he would have thought it was silly. But I'm glad that it worked. I was cautious at the beginning. You know, you could kind of push the button down, and no one answers the call. But we got there until 5 o'clock in the morning, and his daughter, Donna, was there through the entire event, and she was very pleased. So we may not have made John happy because he's passed on, but at least we made someone that John loved happy. So I think we succeeded.
From the few people I've talked to about it, I think you're definitely right, Roy. We succeeded. It was Wes, N2XJN, who went over to the QTH of John, KC2WGB, used his equipment, and therefore, with all legality as far as the FCC is concerned, John's daughter, Donna, was able to talk to us throughout the whole Wake Memorial. And so Wes provided that service. Anybody with any further questions or comments about the Irish Wake of last Friday night, give me a call with us right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay. No further questions on that one. Are there any late check-ins with a question or a comment for the TechNet before we go over to the space report? Please give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW.
KM4KPV, Kilo Mike, Kilo Papa Victor, David.
Okay, very glad you gave us the phonetics, David. Kilo, Mike, 4. Kilo, Papa, Victor. David, go right ahead with your question or comment. K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Dick, thank you very much, and I'm sorry about your silent ham on Long Island. I'm down in Lexington, Kentucky. I see that you guys have 2 DMR repeaters going. For the first night, I got 3 or 4 guys down here, and we initially linked into an IRLP link so that they could kind of hear LIMARC for the first time. And I was wondering if you guys could give me some idea of how successful you think these 2 repeaters are. We're thinking about possibly putting one in here.
Okay. I'm not quite sure who's the right person to answer that question, but maybe it's Eric. If Eric is available, KE2EJ, Eric, you have some words for David? K2RIW, he's got it, Eric.
Sorry, Dick, I was in the middle of fixing something. Repeat the question and I'll try and answer it.
Okay. David, please wait for the beeps and please repeat your question. We've got Eric, KE2EJ, who's the main technical maven who maintains all of the electronics on the LIMARC repeater up here, as well as he is a local public television broadcast engineer. KM4, KPV, please repeat your question, Dave, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Eric, thank you very much. My question is I see that you guys have 2 DMR repeaters in Long Island. Down here in Kentucky, we don't have any in Lexington, which is the second largest city, and we were thinking about possibly putting one in. How well or how happy are you with the ones that you have in Long Island so far?
Wait for the beeps, and you got it, Eric.
Alrighty. Actually, we have 5 DMR repeaters that are all spread around. One thing that you really need if you want to be part of the network, of course, is an internet connection. DMR runs off a particular codec, or they call it a vocoder, which is AMBE2, so it runs at a particularly slow rate. So if you've got hearing problems like I do, it's kind of annoying, but most people get used to it. It's really a very efficient system. If you do put up a DMR system, you'll find that range-wise, you probably do a little better than your analog system. Not by a lot, but it's considerable. Of course, you don't have to worry about noise. You wind up with the cliff effect. Either you're there or you're not. Although there is a smaller area where it starts to sound a little funny because it's trying to use all the error correction that it has possible. And you begin to hear it break down. But all the people around here love it. There's a number of different talk groups if you're on the network, which is worldwide. English, there's North America, there's different talk groups for Midwest, there's talk groups for individual states. When you put a repeater up, let me let it drop. When you put a repeater up, you'll choose what talk groups you want available to you, and of course, if you're a local club, then you would have on a different time slot your local talk group for your local guys. By the way, the DMR repeater actually handles 2 simultaneous conversations, although you can have multiple talk groups on one time slot, and it's shared, meaning that only one guy can transmit at one time. The radio will tell you to wait when the channel's busy, and when the channel's not busy, you get the opportunity to get in. It's an interesting system. If you talk to folks around the country, or even around the world, they pretty much love it. So it's a little bit different than D-Star. It's somewhat similar to RLP, except that you can't directly connect to a particular repeater. That's why we have these talk groups in... So, you know, it's another form of ham radio. I'm going to send it back to you, Dick, K2RIW, K2EJ.
David, you might very well have some further questions or comments on